Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to Ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already, thank you for that. We consider you to be a highly intelligent individual. Nicole Galinas is with us, ladies and gentlemen. Nicole is the Searle Freedom Trust Fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a contributing editor of City Journal. Many of you have seen her byline in all the big publications across the country, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Los Angeles Times, and on. She has an incredible credential as a writer, and she covers a lot of different topics when she does her writing, including urban economics and finance and municipal and corporate finance, et cetera, et cetera. And she's our new friend. Nicole, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here, Nicole. And you follow a number of your compatriots there at the Manhattan Institute, who are good friends of ours. In fact, we just had Tamar Jacoby on only about a week or so ago.
Who's
your immigration expert up there?
Yes.
Nicole, I know that you spent a good bit of time in New Orleans as a student, not all that long ago. I have spent quite a bit of time in South Louisiana in my life, and in fact lived down there for a while. And as most of our audience knows, a year ago today, the world woke up to see how really bad things were getting. Not even how bad they were, but how bad they were getting in New Orleans. Yesterday, we talked to the director of the Chamber of Commerce over in Hancock County, Mississippi, where the hurricane actually came ashore. I mean, the real brunt of the damage, the ground zero for Hurricane Katrina in the United States as a hurricane level three hurricane, was really in Waveland, Mississippi, and Port St. Louis, Mississippi, over in Hancock County. And so they not only got the winds, they got a 25-foot storm surge. But it passed on through, and when that was over, it was over for them. New Orleans continued to fall apart because the levees failed, and then after the storm was gone, the city flooded, didn't it?
Sure, exactly. There's a difference in geography, which was a huge obstacle that it took 40 days to unflood the city, to pump that water back mm-hmm. out into the lake. And even beyond that, New Orleans has its own obstacles to recovery. One thing that the towns in Mississippi have, towns like Biloxi, Waveland, Gulfport, they still had functioning middle classes. That was something that New Orleans had been losing really for 40 years.
Right.
And that's because of one problem that New Orleans has yet to address, and that is necessary, really vital for New Orleans' rebuilding, and that is the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. New Orleans had the highest per capita homicide rate before Katrina, and unfortunately, that is the only thing that has recovered after Katrina. We have
It's still going on today.
Yes, yep. There's been a very high crime rate all summer. There were a couple of shootings just over the weekend as we were going into
I'm going to be in New Orleans next week, the end of next week. I'll be broadcasting my show down there Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. I'll be down there for a Small Business Administration National Advisory Council meeting. Nicole, in an article that you've written about this topic, in fact, about a year ago, when you were covering this as the news was spreading, you called New Orleans a sad city.
Yes, and that is exactly for the reason I mentioned, the loss of the middle class really since 1965 on, and that's both black and white middle class people had started to move long ago to cities like Houston, Atlanta, other cities around the
South. Or across the lake to one of the suburbs.
Sure. or Metairie Covington, there was a lack of trust in the New Orleans government long before Katrina. There was a lot of outrage. Even the summer leading up to Katrina, if you were to pick up some of the old Times-Picayune newspapers, there was just outrage over the rising murder rate and the lack of the government's the local government's capacity to address that, and that was a obstacle.
Isn't this something, though, Nicole, that had been happening to a lot of major cities that called it white flight? There was a lot of that going on in a lot of the cities, but over the last 20 years or so, it seems to me that that's been reversing in a lot of cities, but maybe not New Orleans. Is that what you're saying?
Sure. Many cities, particularly New York, led the way. Reversed it through a greater understanding of policing. They understood that we had to do this by putting criminals in prison for quite a long time.
And Hold on to that thought, Nicole. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about what's going on in New Orleans and what Nicole thinks needs to be done to bring New Orleans back if we actually do that. It's 22. Stay with us.
You're not sitting there alone.
We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Check it out when you get a chance and use it to your advantage. It's all there for you just to help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful as you start, run, and grow your small business. It's all free thanks to our great corporate partners, and we hope you say thanks to them for that. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter, which comes on Sunday by email, and the blog is updated and sent out every weekday. You can come and get it, or we'll send it to you. Nicole Galinas is with us, ladies and gentlemen. She is a writer for City Journal, and she's a fellow with the Manhattan Institute. And we're talking about New Orleans. We're talking about what do we do about New Orleans? And I think that's a fair question, Nicole, for all of us to ask. I think it's our tax dollars are going to be going down there to help. And this is one of the reasons why I wanted you to be on the show today, Nicole, to talk about this. I think it's a fair question for the rest of the world to ask, the rest of America at least, to ask, what are we going to do about New Orleans? What should we demand for the tax dollars that are going to be spent down there? What do you think?
Sure. There's really two key things that the federal government needs to lead the way for New Orleans to rebuild using core conservative principles that have always worked. One, and they're both really equally important, one is to tie money for the criminal justice system toward real reforms. And this is something that, you know, New Orleans now, it has a decimated tax base, so there's clearly an argument for giving some federal money toward the criminal justice system, towards rebuilding the prisons, towards even just operating expenses for the judges and the public defenders. They haven't had money to pay their public defenders in a year, so there's a backlog of cases. And I think the Bush administration and Congress needs to tie that to serious reform of the criminal justice system. And, of course, they can't make the state or the city do anything. We have federalism, but the federal government often ties money toward reform, similar to No Child Left Behind. And what the president could do is work with Governor Blanco and Mayor Nagin and say, look, this is something that is number one to rebuilding the city, because we won't get the middle class back when they see these reports of this high crime in some of these middle class and working class neighborhoods.
Exactly.
So we need to put in place real justice reforms that allow us to manage to keep known violent criminals in
prison. But that's not just about money, though, Nicole, because the police force, the people who populate the police forces are part of the community. And until you get the kind of people in the community who value that kind of those, who have those kinds of values, until you get those people to move in, how are you going to build a successful and effective police force?
Sure, and that's a huge obstacle. It's not just the police, it's also the judges. We have judges down there who don't sentence criminals to jail. They'll just send them right back onto the streets, and that's a huge culture change that needs to happen.
Can I stop you for a second? One thing, I want to say this, and folks, I'm not all that good at being politically correct, so I'm not going to start now. And I don't mean this with any kind of ill will. I don't mean to be crude or rude. And I don't mean to pile on the people there in South Louisiana, but it is a fact, Nicole, I think you'll agree with me, that in terms of the political system in Louisiana, especially South Louisiana, it's been a national joke for decades, hasn't it?
Sure, exactly. And Mayor Nagin, unfortunately, hasn't helped the situation because
The mayor of New Orleans is a joke. The governor Blanco, I think she's a totally ineffective and feckless governor. I think that's been proven to be true. But leave those folks off the table for just a minute. There's another group of people that I've said this a couple of times on my show that I haven't heard anybody else but you and me say this for over a year now. I've been saying, or for at least a year now, I've been saying the people that should be blamed for this are not Nagin and not Blanco and not George Bush, not Brown, not Hector Barreto of the SBA, but people like Billy Tozen, Livingston, go all the way back as far as you want, the federal representatives, the federal delegations down there for decades who have known that city was subject to disaster and didn't require that there be the proper levee systems and redundant levee systems built to protect that city. All those people who took that money and didn't provide and didn't do their job, those are the people, in my opinion, who are criminally responsible for what happened in New Orleans.
Well, I will partially agree with you, but I will say one thing partially in their defense. For a long time, really going back 30 years, we've known exactly what needs to be done in South Louisiana.
There's been no mystery about that at all.
Sure, and part of that is restoring the wetlands. We had 2,800 square miles of wetlands off of South Louisiana's coast, and that started to erode in large part because of the oil and gas development. Now, of course,
those were buffers against storms, weren't they?
Sure, exactly. And many people think, oh, wetlands, that's just sort of a tree hugger cause. But the problem is the storms weaken significantly once they hit land, so it's much better for them to hit unoccupied wetlands land before they hit a city. And New Orleans' congressional delegation has spoken in one voice about this for a long time, and they went to Congress, I think, in the late 90s or early 2000s with a $14 billion plan over several decades to start to restore the wetlands. And that has to be looked at again by the federal government before we spend any more money down there.
You have pointed out, Nicole, that the destruction of the wetlands actually put New Orleans 20 miles closer to the coast than it had been because of that. Hold on to that thought. When we come back, I'm going to ask Nicole if the biggest enemy of successful redevelopment of New Orleans is political correctness. Tintel, stay with us. We'll be right back. Back, it's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Nicole Galinas is our guest. Ladies and gentlemen, she's with the Manhattan Institute, also a contributing editor to City Journal. Nicole, give us your website, please.
It's city-journal.org.
All right, check that out. When you get a chance, you can find Nicole's bylines there. Nicole, when obviously the world saw Nagin, Mayor Nagin of New Orleans, as a feckless, ineffectual, almost a joke, and basically a joke as far in terms of leadership, he was a joke, and still is, I think, and I can't help that. I just think that's the truth. And just when you hoped that maybe New Orleans could learn its lesson and get its feet back on the ground, they reelect the guy. Now, I'll tell you, when New Orleans reelected Nagin, I said, you know what? I'm not going to invest any more emotion in a political system, in a culture that will reelect somebody that's a joke like he is.
Sure. Sure, and I think this goes to the fatalism of New Orleans in general, because the people of New Orleans don't seem to realize that leadership matters. They just seem to say to themselves, we have a big problem and it can't be fixed. And I think if New Orleans were to look to, say, New York as an example of leadership, not just 9/11, everyone knows that story, but even when Mayor Giuliani was first elected to office in 1994, the New York Times ran an article a few weeks before he was inaugurated that said, why would you want to be mayor of New York? The crime is out of control. This was in the days of the Wilding and the Central Park jogger and terrible race riots even into the 90s. And the economy is tanking. No one wants to live in New York. Everyone is leaving. And there's nothing that can be done. Well, Mayor Giuliani turned that around very quickly. He really completely changed the attitude of the city government, and he fought very hard against many entrenched interests. In fact, Mayor Bloomberg still has to fight against those interests to keep the city running. So New Orleans can be turned around. It's just that the leadership there really needs to take a crash course in what it means to...
Well, a crash course is not going to cure generations of Le Bon Temps Roulé.
No, unfortunately.
I mean, tell the audience what that means.
Let the good times roll. And
that's the prevailing sentiment in a lot of South Louisiana, especially New Orleans. Le bon temps roule, let the good times roll. And that attitude is very, very entrenched down there. And that's the reason why they elected the crook governor, Edwin Edwards, who knowing he was probably going to be indicted before he even got out of office, they elected him anyway. And so let me ask you this question, Nicole. And folks, the reason, if it sounds like I'm being hard on New Orleans, I am. And the reason I am is because they're asking for a lot of federal money to rebuild New Orleans, and I think it ought to be done. I think that New Orleans ought to be rebuilt. I hope that it can be, and I hope that, I don't have a problem with my money being spent down there, but I do have a problem with it being spent, with the good money being thrown after bad. And I think any taxpayer has a right to have their opinion about that. But my question to you, Nicole, is will political correctness be the biggest enemy of successfully rebuilding New Orleans?
In some ways, that's true, because we do have a large measure of political correctness in addressing the crime problem. There's a culture of criminality in many New Orleans neighborhoods where you have mothers, sisters, grandmothers who all have had children and grandchildren who have been defendants in the criminal justice system. So they automatically feel sympathy with defendants, and it's very hard for candidates to run on a tough-on-crime platform for that reason. And I think one of the problems is in New Orleans is the breakdown of the two-parent family. And I think we can't just say that's a New Orleans problem. In fact, in some ways, it's a signal for the rest of the nation that this is what happens when you allow the culture of the two-parent family to break down so greatly. And this is, in 1960, only 6% of babies were born out of wedlock. Today, it's something like 25%, and unfortunately, in the black community, it's more like 70%. It's a national crisis, and I think that's one of the reasons that we can't give up on New Orleans, because...
But we can't, we're not going to help them if we promote political correctness. We've got to tell the truth about what's got to be done. Nicole, thank you for being here. Thank you for the good job you're doing, and we'll see you next time. Nicole Galinas, ladies and gentlemen, with the Manhattan Institute. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be back on the other side of the news. Don't go away.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.